The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Ian Cunningham introduced today to the ATL, to the media, and to Falcon fans. And Mike and I, we both have said this, like, there's not a whole lot, a lot not to like about this guy. When you talk about his experience, where he comes from, and what he's about, the job starts now. And Mike, that's part of what we've been talking about today. We're going to play the Matt Ryan soundbite for you guys if you're just tuning in, as Matt was asked about Michael Penix. And I think, again, headline, Mike, clickbait?
Well, I mean, ESPN, Matt Ryan won't commit to Penix Jr. Okay, I mean, you know, technically the letter of the language. Yeah, I guess you could spin it that way. But the question was, is Michael Penix Jr. the starting quarterback? And Matt said, quote, were, as in he and Ian Cunningham, the GM to his right, not the head coach of the football team, so we can't answer that question. A straight, no BS answer, which will be spun into BS. You know, he's given his coach autonomy to run his I run my unit. So we'll see. And also, why box yourself into a corner on the off chance that Penix Jr. isn't ready to go or struggles when he is ready?
Yeah, but the original answer was, we're not the head coach, meaning that is going to be a Kevin Stefanski right. decision, but we still have yet to even talk about that. So I thought he gave a legitimate answer, but it's being twisted around as if, well, he's not a believer, when in fact he went on in that same soundbite and said, right. I've seen Penix. I've been up at the facility the last 3 weeks. He's doing great. His rehab, he's exactly where he needs to be. He's in a good space, head-wise.
Right.
I feel like that is being misconstrued just a little bit. Yeah. All right, we'll let you hear it coming up. Right now, though, we got to talk some dogs. Connor Riley, man, what is going on? It's been a few weeks since we had a chance to talk with you. Want to get your thoughts, first and foremost, Senior Bowl. What are your takeaways for the Georgia players?
Yeah, Georgia's small contingent down there in Mobile last week. You had Dalen Everett down there. Brett Thorson was probably the best Georgia player down there. And like he, as strange as it is here, like he's going to be drafted in the next level. He was a very important player in his time at the University of Georgia. And then they had long snapper Bo Gardner there as well. It's a Georgia draft class, probably not as big as last year when they had 13 guys taken, but there's a good chance, you know, they have two, maybe even three first round picks and possibly four guys taken in the top 50. So for a team that was a good bit younger, maybe not as vintage as some of the other Georgia teams, still a team that has plenty of talent is going to be well represented in the 2026 NFL draft.
Right. And again, we've been told, you know, Kirby is kind of doing it. I'll use the phrase a little more old fashioned than others, not as relying heavily on the transfer portal. So it'll be upperclassmen, hopefully without experience. And hopefully the coaches don't do anything screwy when it comes time for big decisions. Real quick, they're killing it in recruiting. What do we know about Kamon Spell?
Yeah, five-star running back, number one running back in the country. He commits to Georgia on Monday out of Pennsylvania. This is a guy that Georgia really likes. Georgia has a very strong reputation at the running back position. James Cook, a Georgia alum, led the NFL in rushing this season. But I think from a fan perspective as well, there is a skepticism with this just with the way that they've seen recruiting unfold in recent seasons. You have to look just back to last year's recruiting class and Jared Curtis. Five-star out-of-state prospect, number one player in his position, was committed to Georgia for a long time, and then at the 11th hour, he flips to go to Vanderbilt. So it's a new age in recruiting, and I think Georgia fans understand this, where, yeah, you might be in the elite today, but there's still a long way to go between now and signing day, almost 10 months. And this is going to be a battle for Georgia all the way until then. So they're in the lead right now. It's good that they've secured his commitment. But I think Georgia fans, better than anyone, understand that just because you're committed in this day and age, it doesn't mean that you're going to be putting on the red and black in Athens.
What do you think, Kirby, or at least what has he said, and then what are your thoughts about where this team needs to improve? Where do you think Kirby thinks this team needs to improve? What areas?
Yeah, I think the big thing that they're going to look at early in the year is this offensive line, where they return a lot of pieces that played well last year at times. But they've got to figure out how everything fits together. They have a new offensive line coach, Stacy Serrell, stepping into an analyst role. I'll be really interested in seeing how Phil Rauscher puts a further imprint on this offensive line. And like Monroe Frilling at the end of last year was playing incredibly well at that left tackle position. And when he didn't necessarily play well or they didn't have him out there, Gunnar Stockton really struggled. And so going into next season, where I think there are going to be a lot of eyes on Gunnar and how he improves, how Georgia shores up those offensive tackles is going to be really interesting and something I'm looking forward to finding out the answer to.
It's our man Connor Riley, guys. We talk dogs all the time here on Dukes and Bell. We'll tell you more about what happened today at Mercedes-Benz with our new GM. We found out today that the College Football Playoff Committee is going to continue with the schedule. They have released how the schedule is going to play out. We're going to be stuck with 2 weeks of nothing, which I don't really understand. Why? And I know we've heard a number of coaches say, why don't we make this all week after week after week and wrap it up all in the month of December and middle of January?
Yeah, this is one of those things, and it's just so college football where they set these dates so far out in advance. And, you know, a lot of times, like in the non-conference schedule, we don't see these games end up getting played. I think when you look at the schedule, I think you're probably hoping that it doesn't end up being like this, where if I saw today's correct, next year's there is a team that could possibly play in a college football playoff quarterfinal game on December 30th and then possibly play in the national championship on January 25th. It is just, I think they, and we talked with Josh Brooks last week at the Georgia Athletic Board meeting, they're trying to get a handle on this schedule and do what's best. They talked about possibly moving up the start of the season before what is now known as week zero. If you're able to do that, you do sort of get to see the Dan Lanning plan where you go, say, 16 straight weeks and finish on January 1. But you know, seeing a national championship game played on January 25th and seeing that in writing, which is where next year's game will be played in Las Vegas, I think just further underscores how college football as a whole needs to find a better schedule than what they currently have laid out.
It's getting a little ridiculous, isn't it? Tennessee quarterback Joey Aguilar suing to come back for another year of eligibility. Now, if this passes or if he gets, you know, the eligibility, he'll come back as the starter in Tennessee. What do you make of this? Because we're seeing more and more of this.
I hate this, and I understand why Aguilar would do it. I understand why Tennessee would pursue this because they sort of got left out of the musical chairs in the transfer portal quarterback scenario this offseason. But at a certain point, this is not good for college football. And, like, look, Georgia doesn't play Tennessee next year, so this has no bearing on how I view Georgia. I also feel the same way about Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss. I don't think that he should be coming back to school for a sixth season there. Like, unless it's a very specific injury situation where you have, like, multiple torn ACLs or multiple torn Achilles and things like that. I think this is bad for the game of football, specifically college football. And quite frankly, this is turning it more into a minor league sport, which some say this has always been. But having a guy like Joey Aguilar, who's in his sixth year, having a guy like Trinidad Chambliss, who's in his sixth year, sure, that's good for those guys as individuals, but I don't think that's good for the rest of the Tennessee football program. I don't think it's good for the younger guys on that roster, because I don't think that college football should be 23, 24, 25-year-olds playing. Look, Georgia's benefited from that in the way that COVID changed things. Stetson Bennett was an older quarterback, and they won two straight national championships with him, so you understand why teams do that. But on the whole, I just think we need to get back to a place where you have 4 years or you have 5 years to play four seasons of college football. We don't need guys hanging around for 6 years like you saw. Even Carson Beck this past year take advantage of that.
Right. I know that there's some new faces in college football this year, and you got a new coach at Auburn, Alex Golish. I was kind of, Carl, when I was talking off the air, his comments about basically, you know, well, you kind of govern yourself accordingly. You go with what feels right. So basically, that's just more affirmation. There are no rules. I mean, he has a code, but what is his code? And I just to follow up, I know we heard that some folks would like to see the SEC kind of set their own rules and let everyone try to follow along.
Yeah, like ultimately, and I think as Golish outlines, everyone is sort of for themselves, and you have to do what is best for you. I think Jerry Moorhead last week had some very strong comments about how maybe the SEC needs to step up and be a leader in this regard in terms of setting rules and enforcing punishments, even if that hurts individual schools as a whole. Jerry Moorhead has always, I think, been more of a law and order type president, wants to adhere and wants to play by the rules. Whereas there are some other schools out there, Ole Miss, LSU, who are more willing to skirt by and do what is in best interest of those programs. But I don't know how a fan looks at what college football has devolved into and says that doing what is best for your individual program is what's best for the game. And look, that might sound like sour grapes coming from someone who covers the Georgia football program, but I think the sport as a whole would be in a healthier spot if they're, you know, and they follow the SEC order of going through and enforcing these rules, having punishments, and getting everyone to say sort of play by the same rules. Because on an uneven playing field, I think you're only going to further see the sport fray like it has in recent years. And that makes it really frustrating, I think, for fans to follow.
Connor Riley, our guest from Dog Nation. I don't know where you have the Dogs. We are a long way off, but my guess is they will be a top three team in the country. And then you look at the SEC, and this is my question to you, Connor. You've got Ryan Silverfield at Arkansas, Will Stein at Kentucky, Pete Golding taking over Ole Miss. We know they saw him in the playoff, but again, this will be his first full season there. John Summerall at Florida. You just talked about Golish at Auburn. Kiffin switches, you know, and is at LSU. Bunch of new coaches in the SEC. How much of an advantage does that give Kirby?
I think a healthy bit, and I think the SEC right now, even, you know, beyond the big talking point over they haven't won a national championship in the last 3 years, I think the top of the conference is in a real state of change where, all right, you know, when Oklahoma and Texas joined the league, you know, Oklahoma had long been a very successful program. Bob Stoops, Lincoln Riley. Well, Brent Venables comes in, and yes, they made the playoff this year, but I'm still not sure how solid that program is. Alabama has clearly taken a step back with Nick Saban retiring, and that was always going to be the case, but I think there are a lot of questions being asked about Alabama right now. Texas and Steve Sarkisian, you want to see them maybe take another step forward, be a more consistent power, maybe get back to the SEC championship. But Georgia, I think more than anyone else, should feel very secure at the top of their spot in the conference. But you look around because there were so many coaching changes in this league a year ago, and some of the other top contenders seem like they're taking a step back from where they were over the previous decade. You see why the SEC is not the surefire best conference in college football anymore. Right. And I think enters next season in an even more tenuous position than when it found itself this year, where for all the questions about the top end strength of the league, it still did get five teams into the college football playoff. And when you factor in Texas and Vanderbilt as well, had seven of the top, say, 15 teams in the country this year.
All right, before we cut you loose real quick, Connor, because we played a soundbite from Todd Monken, who's making friends and influencing others up in Cleveland already. How toxic was it, or is it overblown, the relationship between him and Stetson Bennett?
You know, it's not all on Todd, but I just don't think Todd ever viewed Stetson Bennett as a starting caliber quarterback. And, you know, as people in Cleveland have gotten here, he's a little blunt. He's gruff. He's off the cuff. He is who he is, and he calls it like he sees it. And I think that just Todd never really fully believed in Stetson, and Stetson just sort of kept his head down, kept getting better. Georgia owes a lot of credit to Buster Faulkner, the now Florida State offensive coordinator, who worked very closely with Stetson, both on the field and off the field, and sort of helping him get the most out of it. But he and Stetson were not on the best of terms, even when things were going well at the University of Georgia.
Good stuff. Connor, tell the people where they can follow you.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorRiley, even though it's the dead of the offseason. We still got a ton of Georgia coverage out
there. Right on. All right, my man. Great stuff. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate you stopping by.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Arch Manning, Cam Coleman, Hollywood, get used to the name, Hollywood Smothers, running back, Relique Brown. Texas should have the best offense in the SEC with these transfers, Mike. Mm. And then you talk about Will Muschamp taking over the defense. A lot of pressure on Sark to get this done.
Yeah, man. I was going to say, this is it. This is Sark. This is it.
A lot of pressure.
Can Sark not get in his own way with all that talent? That's right, man.
We're going to see. All right, man. I want to remind you guys that we are your home for the Super Bowl. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Join us Sunday for a full day of local and national coverage leading up to the live play-by-play coverage at 6:30. Brought to you by our friends at Window Nation. Buy four windows, get four free. By Trajan Wealth, your local trusted fiduciary advisors. And by your local Honda dealers at Super Bowl 60 Sunday on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike, what do we have coming up in Guy Talk?
Oh, we got lots of stuff, Carl, as they say on the GOG show. Lots of stuff. You got a lot of fans up in New York not happy with a move made by new coach John Harbaugh. Also coming up, how about walking around Centennial Olympic Park with an open container?
What?
Is that something you'd be interested in here in the A? We'll talk about it next.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, Make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Meola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. Men's National Team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I got a very attentive producer who just sent me a link to a story I teased, which means, Carl, he was not listening to my tease.
Him and Orrin have some stuff going on in there, man. What's
going on over there? I mean,
we're talking about Lindsey Vonn.
Day-Day is sending encouraging messages on the DM to Lindsey Vonn right now over in Italy.
I believe in you, Lindsey.
I'm trying to coach him on what to tell Carson, Lindsey, while she's overseas.
You're
right
a winner.
Now.
You are deeply in my thoughts and prayers.
We used to do these bits. I suppose I could probably edit them down and clean them up. I don't know. Mike, I don't have Conti to let us play them, but Orrin knows. Back in the day, we had this really creative, wonderful person named Natalie, who worked with us, Natalie Roberts, for years as our sort of, instead of Mr. Voice, it was Miss Voice. Mm-hmm. And she did some great work, and we did this bit. Because, you know, when you watch the Olympics, half the Olympics is nothing going on. It's, you know, men generally aren't the target demographic. It's women, and they'll have all those stories, the behind-the-scenes stories, you know, like young Erbo Čvubač in the small town in Slovenia. He was born without a spine, which made him perfect for the, you know, whatever it was, the long jump, or whatever he was doing. You know, and they have these heartwarming stories about somebody has to overcome, you know, in some cases, tragedy. So we had this one we did where it was like she was a skater, but she was a sex addict, and she was Russian. It's like, I've never seen so many large, muscular men talking about being on the hockey team because, you know, the dorms are kind of a free-for-all during the Olympics.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll work on that. We got 3 weeks of the Olympics coming. It all starts Friday with the opening ceremony. And Natalie can do a really good sexy Russian voice.
Doing, by the way?
I think she's still doing voice work. She does
great. Yeah,
she every now and again, on the commercial that we play.
You'll hear a commercial with Natalie on it. And I work with her at the old 790 The Zone. Just a wonderfully creative person. We love her to death and a good person.
She is.
So Natalie, if you listen, how you doing? I'll get back to her. All right, man. Coming up, we're going to talk to Chase Briscoe. We're getting ready for Daytona 500, baby. Great American race. And then we got the Atlanta race on the heels of it at Echo Park Speedway. So stay tuned. All right, here's a new one for a Major League Baseball's locker room or clubhouse, as they call it. Munetaka Murakami. You say it like Harry Carey. Here comes to the plate, Munetaka Murakami. Anyway, he's the new slugger from Japan that the White Sox signed. So when he took the tour, I guess, of U.S. Cellular Field, whatever the hell they call it these days, I guess he noticed something was missing in the clubhouse.
What was missing?
Well, from the GM, Chris Getz, one thing that he noticed is we don't have a bidet in our locker room. That was new to him. It was like, oh, okay, that's new. We can do that. Apparently, bidets are common in Japanese league clubhouses.
Mm.
Now, for Squid Billy and others not familiar, think of it as a water fountain for your tukus.
Did you just say squid?
We used to joke around. Remember, there's that great scene in Crocodile Dundee when he comes to New York. I think he's staying at the park or the Waldorf Astoria, whatever it is. And he's kidding. He goes, "What's that gadget? What's that gadget for?" And he goes, "Oh, it's for washing your bum." You know, he yells out the window. I will say this: my only time to Japan in 2005, the hotel I stayed at, they had a remote control toilet. It was a thing where, I mean, temperature settings, they take washing your nether regions very seriously over there. So apparently, I wonder if other White Sox players who have not embraced the bidet concept will now get on board when the pale hose head north, Carl.
Are they gonna add one for him?
Yes. They're going to add a bidet into the clubhouse in Chicago.
Wow.
I have a confession to make, guys.
Lay it on us.
You have one?
Wife, when she was pregnant, you know, just for the sake of helping a pregnant woman out, I got my wife one of those.
Oh, those couldn't be cheap.
The one we got, like, I'm not going to lie, I sprung for an uber fancy one.
Holy wow.
This thing has a seat warmer.
Mm-hmm. The best.
It has controlled water temperature and pressure. And the kicker, after you finish, it's got a fan to help you dry. I'm telling you right now, it revolutionizes the way that, like, I'm not gonna lie, I enjoy it.
And you shouldn't. Look, my friend took his family out to California the first time they had an experience with this, and his son kept going to the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
And he said to his wife, he's like, Lindsey, why is Ari keep going to the bathroom? What's going on? Is he sick? And she said, I don't know what's going on. So he'd go in there, close the door, and be in there.
Oh, wow.
And finally, he said, I had to knock on the door. I'm like, "Are you all right? What's going on in there? Dad, I'm all right." What's happening? Why are you spending all this time in there? So he's he opens the door. His son's like, you know, six. He says, I just like this toilet. He wouldn't get off of it.
No, I mean, I got to be honest, man. That I have never seen such a contraption. And I guess it's
a heated seat, Mike?
Something in the Pacific Rim, because I've been to Singapore.
Game changer.
I've been to Hong Kong, and they didn't have one in the hotel. They had it in Singapore. Mm. But the one in Japan had the remote control. Literally, you're sitting
on the wall.
No, it's like, so when you're it's like there's like a control. It's like Velcro. You take it off plug in what you want.
Wow.
A nice warm splash.
Hey, look.
Yes.
But they're not cheap to Owens Port.
I can't imagine.
I don't think
Big
they
O
are.
Dropped the. I can't even imagine what that would. Yeah, not exactly something you're going to find at Home Depot or Lowe's either.
Yeah, I think you have to order it. Do you have to order it? I'm guessing.
Mine came from Amazon. But you can get them from other places too. Yeah. But yeah.
Some friends of mine bought a
shout
home
out to Tushy.
Like right up here behind WSB and renovated.
They got them?
And they got some installed.
All right. Right now there's a guy in his car right now driving an I-20 on his way to Alabama. I never heard Feinbaum talk about no bidets.
Fancy bum washers.
Yeah. Fancy thing for washing your butt. And somebody used a Jewish word. That's tukas, so that's Yiddish. Anyway. Not that everybody who roots for Alabama sounds that way, Carl. We just envision it that way.
Yes, it's true.
Most Feinbaum listeners do sound that way, but I digress.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of radio listeners.
Alabama!
Why do you hate Bama so much? Man, by the way, I got a buddy, when I worked as a bartender in Tallahassee, I got a buddy, Kyle, who's a bouncer, and he's going all in for the game to Tuscaloosa. I'm like, dude, we just had Malzahn quit, and now we're going to spend money for an Airbnb in Tuscaloosa to watch the Crimson Tide grease FSU by probably 50 points.
Norvell's calling plays, though, right?
I shudder to think. I'm sorry, sidebar. Speaking of guys calling plays, Giants fans not happy with one of the big moves by John Harbaugh, bringing Matt Nagy in as the OC.
Ooh.
A lot of folks look at the downturn in the production of the Kansas City Chiefs the last couple of years. Now, some of that has to do with offensive line issues, lack of explosive wide receiver play, wide receiver suspensions, Kelsey being too old a year ago, better this year.
Yep.
So is that a bad hire, Matt Nagy, for the G-men as OC?
He's got to reprove himself. Like, that's the deal. And Mike, he's getting this clout because of Andy Reid, right? Look, he was a head coach, and then Andy comes back. He came back home, went back to the farm, and now he's leaving again. But I think he's got to reprove himself. And I don't know if Giants fans feel like that was their first choice. That's part of this.
Our sister station, guys on FAN in New York are killing this move as well because you want to develop Jackson Dart.
So correct.
We shall see. Speaking of the Chiefs, I just looked at the prop bets. In the old days, you could only make bets like this at the old Imperial Palace in Vegas across from Caesars. But based on recent chatter and betting style projections for the 26th Super Bowl, a prop bet they're taking right now, estimated to be 55 to 70% chance that announcer Chris Collinsworth on NBC will mention Patrick Mahomes during the broadcast, despite the fact he's not playing in the game.
I do like that prop bet. If I could get it, I'm with you.
I take a money line on that.
I would.
Other analysis suggests, this is from AI, 70% or higher chance, predicting a comparison when a quarterback makes a similar sidearm or off-platform throw. So if Darnold or Drake improvises,
looks like Mahomes.
Expect Patrick Mahomes. Only like a 30% chance you're not going to hear Patrick Mahomes' name mentioned.
I think, Mike, it's probably early in the game when he goes, you know, it's a first time in a few years we haven't seen.
Right. And the other thing is, if you remember John Madden, it's one of those things that came up in our 98 NFC Championship in 99 when the Falcons, John Madden, with all due respect, didn't know much about the Falcons. It was the Falcons-Vikings, and John Madden would still find a way to mention Brett Favre. I don't do a good Madden, but he would work Brett Favre into it. All right, man, another story for you. They're kicking this idea around, and it would be interesting. What do you think about open containers in Centennial Olympic Park or downtown Atlanta just in time for the World Cup next summer?
Because they know how many folks are going to be here enjoying the festivities. All those new hotels, restaurants, and stuff are going to be open.
Correctamundo.
I think they should do it.
And I think you could make the argument that Centennial Olympic Park Drive is going to be a parking lot.
It is.
Marietta Street's a parking lot anyway, whether it's a Falcons or Hawks game or whatever.
Well, it's probably going to be closed off.
Right. So I don't really see the worry for barreling into the stands. I mean, look, and the folks walking around. Look, there's always going to be somebody who can't handle their sauce. We get that. But I've always thought it's great. I used to love when I had season tickets for United, my wife and I lived in Midtown. We'd walk across the park. You know, imagine, you get your cocktail over at Park Bar, go over to Meehan's, and then work your way around with a cocktail like you're in New Orleans. Why not?
Yeah. Look, for the events that are coming, you're right. Perfect timing. Does this need to get passed, by the way? What's the deal?
Yeah, it's going to be the city council. They've got to run it by the – and while you're on it, maybe run by taking down the concrete off of Juniper.
Mayor Dickens, you need to do something about this.
See, when you got to, Carl has to go down Juniper to go to College Park like twice a week to call Skyhawks. He's now, I know you thought I was prone to hyperbole, and then you experienced the traffic jam.
I owned it a few weeks ago. I came in, I said, look, you were right about this. And by the way, yesterday wasn't that bad. We'll see what the rest of the week looks like.
Right on. So stay tuned on and see how the city council goes for that.
I mean, it was bad, Mayor Dickens. It was terrible.
Yeah, Juniper is a quagmire. It's a train wreck, and it sends traffic all the way back up into Buckhead, believe it or not. Hey, man, 25 years ago, what happened 25 years ago on this date? Football related, not NFL.
Oh, okay. College related?
This is the XFL.
The original.
Yes, it was. The Las Vegas Outlaws against the New York, New Jersey Hitmen. Only reason I know it, I was there with the XFL. He Hate Me made his debut. Strippers funneling beer in the stands. We took a limo there. A bunch of Mexican dudes gave us a ride back to Mandalay Bay in a pickup truck. We left at halftime. It was that
bad. Where was the game played, by the way?
It was at the Sam Boyd Stadium.
Okay.
It was right there where UNLV used to play.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Now the UNLV plays at the Raiders Stadium.
Yeah, but it's not there anymore. Well, it's there probably, but they play at the Raiders Stadium.
And one last nugget also this weekend, guys, kicking off is Waste Management, the rowdiest golf tournament in all of the PGA Tour. It's like Happy Gilmore on steroids, although they said they've tried to curb and bring back some of the shenanigans to a more reasonable, good luck with that, level. Back in 1997, this weekend, Tiger Woods hits one of his 20 holes in one. 20 holes in one. He was the youngster back in 97 and obviously blew the minds of the crowd before he, of course, goes on his way to win the Masters.
One of my favorite tournaments to watch because the crowd's so interactive.
Right. And I think it's 17 is that par 3 stadium they
stadium, built. Yeah. It's incredible. And they boo you, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Why not, man? I love it. I mean, maybe not as those levels. There's a great meme of a guy who's just hammered who doesn't fall over at the Waste Management. He's talking on his phone and he literally goes like 45 degrees front and back and manages to stay on his feet. But that's what it's known for. A drunken debacle.
I love that when they open the door and everybody's running to get their play. Literally running.
Right.
It's crazy. All right, man. We got plenty more to dive into. We're going to talk some NASCAR with Chase Briscoe.
Well, you don't like NASCAR. I'll fight you. Earnhardt, 3.
He's going to join us coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. And this podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.
Number 19 car, Chase Briscoe, joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Dukes and Bell. Chase, man, it's good to talk with you again. Mike and I were saying we ran into you last year as you guys get ready for Daytona, and there's just a lot of good info and good vibes coming from NASCAR right now. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Excited to hopefully race tomorrow night. We'll see if it actually happens. But, yeah, appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, man, Daytona, the Great American Race, qualifying, all the great action that comes with it, man, is a blast. Restrict your plate racing, but do you dig super speedways? You've already got a win at Talladega, so I feel you got a feel for it.
I'll be honest, it's not my favorite thing to go do, but certainly to watch, I love watching it. It's different when you're on the inside, but, you know, as a fan, like, you know, Saturday for the Xfinity race or Friday for the truck race, yeah, I absolutely love watching it. It's for the drivers, it's not as quite fun being in there, just knowing what can happen. And, you know, typically the wrecks are big and they hurt always if you crash at Daytona or Talladega. But, yeah, it is a very unique style of racing. And it's fun in its own way. It just it's a little bit different whenever you strap in a Daytona or a Talladega. But certainly it's a lot of fun to watch, that's for sure.
We're talking with Chase Briscoe, guys. Joe Gibbs Racing, Toyota. And, of course, one of the best drivers on the circuit. I want to ask you about, you know, what's changed for you as where you are now in your career and when you first got into NASCAR? What's fundamentally changed?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just switching teams, you know, going from Stewart Haas Racing, which was, you know, one point one of the powerhouse teams. And then, you know, when I came in, it was kind of on the downfall of Stewart Haas Racing. And, yeah, you know, they shut down at the end of 2024 and kind of put me in this spot where I didn't know necessarily where I was going to go. And the timing of it all just kind of worked out perfect where Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, had an opening with one of their drivers retiring and was able to, you know, fill that spot. And it's been huge, you know, just from a performance standpoint. You know, Joe Gibbs Racing is, you know, one of the, you know, elite teams. It's one of the big three teams. It'd be like a, you know, a baseball player playing for the Yankees or, you know, whatever. It's just, it's a place you want to be at. You know, they're going to win, you know, they're going to be good. And that's been honestly the biggest turning point, you know, in the course of the last, you know, 24 months for sure.
Talking with Chase Briscoe, and guys, more on the new Falcons GM, what our new Ian Cunningham GM had to say, coming at the top of the hour. Chase, how tough is Atlanta Motor Speedway now, Echo Park Speedway, for you? I was looking at the stats and looking at the numbers, trying to crack a top 10. I know since they've resurfaced it, it's like a mini Talladega. So what do you got to do to win?
Yeah, luck has not been on my side every time we go there. I feel like if there's a big crash at Atlanta or Echo Park or whatever we call it now, I'm normally in it, normally right in the middle of it. So yeah, hopefully that'll change this time around. You know, truthfully, that Atlanta race, I feel like I tell everybody, you know, that's probably turned into the best race to watch. Like, if you're going to go to a race in person, I feel like the Atlanta race, just from a racing standpoint, is just unbelievable. You know, this, it is a Daytona Talladega-style super speedway, but it's not 2.5 miles. It's only a mile-and-a-half racetrack, and things just happen so fast. You know, for us, from the driver's side, at least, it is so mentally draining, you know, after those Atlanta races, just because you're processing things and things are happening so fast. I always tell people, you know, it'd be like a Major League Baseball player. You know, the bases are 90 feet apart. Well, if you made the bases 45 feet apart, you know, that ground ball is going to happen way quicker. Everything's going to happen faster, and that's what Atlanta is like for us.
I know, as you said, you got to depend on other guys not wrecking in front of you, but do you do the simulator stuff on Echo Park?
A little bit. The super speedways are typically the one style of racetrack that we won't do simulator at, but Atlanta's kind of this unique racetrack where it is a super speedway, and typically, you know, at a Daytona or Talladega, we just run wide open the whole time, but Atlanta, you can't do that. So your car's handling really does matter. So that's one of the only super speedways that we ever will sim. We don't, you know, use the same 4 to 6 hours that we typically would, but yeah, we definitely will still sim Atlanta, just because as it gets older and starts aging, you know, the balance of your race car starts getting harder and harder to get around that place. So, yeah, it's turning into one that it's kind of this hybrid racetrack.
Now, Mike and I, you know, we like fast cars. And we get to cheat a little bit every now and then on the road. You drive fast for a living. What about your regular driving?
Yeah.
How do you go about this, like, day to day? Do you find yourself, like, just on the road? You're like, oh, damn, I need to lay off the gas a little bit. Or do you drive normal? I'm curious.
Right.
I mean, I'd be lying if I said I don't speed a little bit. I'm not crazy by any means. Like, if I'm going 20 over, that's up there for me.
Okay.
I'm like a 9 to 15 over kind of all the time. But I mean, yeah, I've had some speeding tickets, but none of them are ever really more than, you know, 10, 15 over.
Gotcha. When you had your first win, did Stewart Haas Racing have a stripper pose as a state trooper and pat you down on the side of the road?
They did not. They did not do that.
All right, Day-Day. It's Days of Thunder. My producer's looking at me like I got three heads. All right, Chase, before we cut you loose, I had to work it in there. Hey, man, what do you think of going back to 10-race chase format? I know that they've tried to pump the playoff atmosphere into NASCAR. I'm old school. I watched Earnhardt win his championships. To me, if you got the best car over the course of the year, that should be the team that wins out. How do you feel about how they're going back to sort of a more familiar format?
Yeah, I'm excited. I've never raced under any format other than the playoffs, and the chase is kind of what I grew up watching. So I'm excited. You know, I do think it's kind of this perfect mix where it still rewards winning with the added bonus points that they're going to give us. But it's really, at the end of the day, going to reward consistency and the guys that are up front week in and week out. And, you know, that's the thing I think that as a competitor you want. If you're the best guy for, you know, a large majority of the season, you want to be the guy that normally wins the championship. But you still have to perform in the playoffs. We've seen it, you know, in the past with the chase. You know, Tony Stewart, he was my hero. And in 2011, he was terrible. And then in the playoffs, he goes and wins 5 out of the 10 races and wins the championship. So, yeah, I think this is going to be great to go back to it. And I really do think this is kind of the perfect format, you know, for our current state of NASCAR. And it's going to be exciting because winning's still going to matter, but that consistency is going to be really important as well.
And I don't know how you feel about it, Ryan. I've talked about it with Carl. I like them trying new ideas, throwing stuff up on the wall, see if it sticks, like going to the L.A. Coliseum, like you mentioned, being at Bowman Gray, the old historic track, and basically the size of a high school stadium.
Different things.
You know, and like the dirt track at Bristol. I mean, I kind of dig it. Do the drivers dig it?
I do, for sure. I love that they're not afraid to try stuff. And that's something that over the last couple of years they've, you know, really tried to do more of, I feel like, is just go outside the box, whether it's going to, you know, L.A. Coliseum or, you know, even last year, Mexico City. This year, you know, the San Diego race, then, like you said, Bowman Gray, which is, It's funny you say it's like going around a high school track. I remember as a kid, you know, you'd be in PE or whatever and running around the track. And you're like, man, I wonder what it'd be like to drive a car around this thing. And that's literally what we do at Bowman Gray. So, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun tomorrow night.
I just saw recently you went on a podcast. You fish? You fish?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
You have to. I'm sponsored by Bass Pro. I got to be.
But, you know, people wonder. I mean, people, they literally like, yeah, you wear it, but do you really do it? I just got a fly fishing trip for my birthday, man. What do you like to catch? Where do you go?
I love largemouth bass fishing, but I do enjoy, I got into offshore fishing the last couple of years, so I'm not very good at doing it. I've went out on my own a couple times. It's never really gone that great. But, yeah, it's hard to be just largemouth bass fishing. I love doing that, especially a lot of the racetracks have like some lakes or ponds nearby, and it's easy. I just take a fishing pole with me everywhere I go, and yeah, there's some really cool spots along the trail.
Awesome. Well, you got to know where to go offshore. That's the key, man. Right, you know the deal. Hey, Chase, man, we appreciate you stopping by. Number 19 car, guys, we'll be watching, wishing you the best of luck. Joe Gibbs Racing, Toyota, and we'll be watching you throughout the course of the season. Chase, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
You got it, man. It's on Fox, by the way, tomorrow night. And then, as you said, Daytona, of course, you got the dual races to set the field. The 500 is coming up on the 15th. And then the Auto Trader 400 Echo Park Speedway, guys. As we said, the artist formerly known as AMS. And we'll be there. And hopefully we'll catch a break, get some good weather. You can always get tickets online.
All right, coming up, we have to dispel what was said. And we're going to do that along with giving you our opinions on our new general manager, next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.